Welcome to the Golf Industry Uncut. On-demand audio for the world of golf like never before. Exclusively on THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Network. Now, here's your host, JB.
Welcome, everyone, to THP Radio. I'm your host, JB, and today we have a new episode of the Golf Industry Uncut. Each episode of Uncut will feature one of the brilliant minds of the golf industry, and they'll be placed in the hot seat to discuss equipment, technology, and the entire golf industry landscape. Today, we are honored to welcome our first timer to the show. He is an Emmy Award winner, Jeff Newbarth. Are you ready to step into the hot seat?
I am ready and excited for it, Josh.
Appreciate that. THP Radio is your new twist on on-demand audio in the world of golf, and the Golf Industry Uncut is your complete access to the equipment world that you're craving the info on. The way the show works is easy. Once we press the record button, which we've done, there's no editing till the show ends, so you hear it all. Let's jump right into it. Now, we have a lot of golf guests on, but your timeline and career timeline are a bit different. You started at USA Network, you've worked at ESPN, you've worked at the Golf Channel, now you're at Callaway. Can you discuss the timeline a little bit and how you came to be at Callaway Golf?
Sure, absolutely. It's definitely the career path that most haven't taken. But I think it also reflects kind of the evolving world of media and brand and branded content. And, it definitely shows sort of the thinking and kind of the outside the box thinking, but also the leadership of my boss, of Harry Arnett, to even want to, enter this realm. But I actually started, it's kind of funny, the first job I had in media was when I was in high school. I was assigned to cover a person who was sort of like a musical up-and-comer who claimed in his bio he went to my high school, which was Palmetto High in Miami. And the guy's name was Vanilla Ice. And he came out there and said he went to our high school. So I kind of went through old yearbooks and stuff and quickly realized he didn't go to the school. Through just making some phone calls and work, ended up kind of partnering up with someone at the Miami Herald. And we somehow, some PR person granted us an interview with him where we quickly asked him some questions about his time at our high school, which, of course, he couldn't answer since he didn't go there. And then as we were sort of escorted out by the PR group, there was a person outside who said, "Oh, you mean Robbie?" And she turns out she had dated him in Dallas and told us the whole story. So we ended up kind of co-authoring this article.
Was he Rob Van Winkle there, or was he Vanilla Ice?
Rob Van Winkle. It was Robbie Van Winkle was his real name. And this sort of friend of his from Richardson, Texas, sort of told us the whole story. And we ended up publishing that. It got picked up sort of in a few national publications. And then I ended up interning right after that. Someone from one of the local ABC affiliates in Miami called me, and they were starting a new kind of teenage programming block. And they ended up wanting to get kids from different high schools involved, whether it was writing, producing, running cameras, being on camera, which thankfully my mother's the only one who has the VHS tapes, and those are going to stay locked up of those appearances. But I ended up doing that show, and then two or three of the people who worked at that station had attended Syracuse and got me involved and interested in Syracuse. So I attended college up in Syracuse and then immediately interned between my junior and senior year in New York City for USA Network. And as you mentioned, that's where I first started working. It was pretty cool. I graduated college on a Sunday, and on Tuesday I was on a flight to Paris to work the French Open, where I think I hold the only distinction of doing graphics and spelling the word tennis wrong on the air, because that's before spell check and all these auto computer programs. We were going for the French pronunciation of tennis. We just forgot an N.
That is quite the distinction to hold.
Yeah, worked at USA Network, which a lot of people don't remember, but JB, they used to have all the sports. I mean, they had the Big East basketball at one point. They had the NHL. Now, as part of the NBC family, as they get closer to the Olympics, they get sports back again. But for a while, sports was a key property for USA. We had the Masters, we had the Ryder Cup. We had almost all the early round golf, including the Players, so many great events. And then we had our two sort of flagship events, which I loved working with, French Open Tennis and the U.S. Open Tennis in New York. The first event I ever produced was a mixed doubles final at the U.S. Open. And then the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show, which was hysterical for me because that was the highest rated show I worked on all year.
And it's still big to this day.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, it was, I remember one year we did it, and we were the ones who sort of authorized or didn't call security when Triumph showed up, back when Triumph was, and Conan were big on NBC. They did a spoof kind of on the show, and it was all kind of in good fun. And then after leaving kind of the USA Network, when sort of what happens in the media is mergers and acquisitions acquired, USA was acquired by NBC. At that point, I left and went out kind of on my own and went freelance and worked for Fox Sports South, kind of a bunch of random stuff for the old Outdoor Life Network, which was definitely some interesting stuff, and then started doing events for ESPN.
And now, did you go to Connecticut for that, or were you still in Florida?
No, you know what? At that point, I'd moved from New York City to Florida and, you know, grew up in Florida, wanted to get back and was living in Florida at the time, and got lucky that ESPN needed someone to help work on their broadcast in the Southeast Conference of basketball. So being a Floridian, it was kind of a natural fit. And the director who I ended up working with, got in with Jimmy Moore, after our second or third show, he said, hey, you know, we have an opening for a position on Sunday Night Baseball. Jimmy was the director of Sunday Night Baseball at the time. And he said, would you want to do it? And absolutely, I wanted to do that. So I jumped on Sunday Night Baseball. And that was sort of my first, after leaving, you know, the USA world, which was kind of safe and secure. That was kind of my first kind of national show that I did. And I did that show up till I left ESPN in 2012. And Jimmy and I would then go on to work the NBA package together, doing, you know, various regular season games. And Jimmy's currently the director for the finals. He's been doing the finals, God, probably since 2009 or 10, somewhere in there. Does a great job, and was lucky enough to be part of his crew. Worked at ESPN up through 2012, and was just kind of looking for a change. You know, had been on the road so much. When Mark Loomis, who we'll get to in a little bit, came back to ESPN in around 2009 or 2010, ESPN acquired the British Open. And Mark asked me to work the British Open and was super excited to do that. And, you know, that kind of reignited the golf bug, because for a while I hadn't really done a lot of golf, and certainly played it, but missed working it. And getting to do those British Opens for a couple of years, 3 years for ESPN, led me to want to do more golf. And then when NBC, again, these mergers and acquisitions, which you'll see as a theme in media, when they ended up fully acquiring Golf Channel and taking over Golf Channel, Molly Solomon called me, who's their executive producer, and we worked at something where I worked on Morning Drive, and that was a great experience for a year and a half. And then when I left Golf Channel, you know, just kind of wanted to do something different. And through mutual acquaintance, Harry Arnett, who I'd met while I was at Golf Channel, and I started talking, and, you know, I mean, obviously you documented it very well, the amazing work that Harry and his team had done for at that point, probably 2 years. And I was lucky enough that Harry asked me to come on board and help sort of work with our Callaway Media Productions and see where we could take it from there.
Now, we won't get too much into the growing change at Callaway and what they've done is become a media production company compared to just a brand. I find it fascinating, outside of what I do for a living, just from a consumer standpoint, that it's taking place, because it's not taking place in a lot of consumer goods. But that's for another conversation. Now, when you were approached to come to Callaway Golf to produce content, what were your thoughts, being that these changes were taking place? You'd met Harry, like you said. Were you thinking, well, what do they mean, produce content?
You know, I think that before I even met with Harry, I had done a little research just watching what they've done online and through the different, you know, channels that Callaway had at the time and certainly still has, and which is super impressed. And, you know, one of the things that I think that as people who are creatives, you're always looking for what's next. And, you know, as many times as you do a baseball game, there's only so many things you can do creatively to produce a baseball game. You know, in theory, you know, one of the great things that one of my role models at ESPN always said was, the most important thing is the correct documentation of the event. So as a producer, you're sitting there thinking of all these things you can do that honestly aren't the event. You're thinking of, how do I make this game more interesting? You know, am I going to talk, you know, great shortstops in the fourth inning or whatever you're going to do? But at the end of the day, the most important thing is to document the event. And so you could sit there and you have this great plan of how you're going to tell the greatest story and you're going to do a whole thing on pitching. And next thing you know, the starting pitcher is knocked out after, you know, an inning and a third, and that whole plan went out the window. So one of the things that's so enticing to me and was so enticing to me at the time and still is about Callaway is we sort of have a clean slate to do whatever we kind of want. You know Harry very well. There aren't too many times when you go, hey, Harry, I'm passionate about this idea. I think it fits our brand. I think it will be good for us. What do you think about doing it? He's not going to say no. And you know, if you're not trying really hard and you don't do a couple things that are complete duds and fall flat on your face, then you're not trying to be creative enough. And it's rare in the current age of media. Just think about all the pressures. You know, it's all we're reading about, people cutting cords, you know, cable affiliates going down, ratings pressure, the amount of options you have for content. You can't be over creative because if you take a chance and you fail in that world, the stakes are super, super high. I think where we are kind of in the branded content world is we're almost kind of where cable TV was maybe 20, 25 years ago, where we can take some chances. We can try some things. You know, think about ESPN2 with Keith Olbermann in the leather jacket. That probably wouldn't fly today, but they did it. And
for
that got them a brand
reasons.
And they got them association. Yeah. But that got them their attention, their association, and it got them a chance. What's happening now with branded content is we're becoming the players to direct content to the consumer directly. We don't have to necessarily always go through the media partners. They're super valuable and we love them, but you can do things sort of direct and you can take chances that you may not be able to take in other venues.
Well, it's interesting that you describe it like that, because one of the things that we said has been missing from golf is, at least from the brands and the media, is fun. At the end of the day, golf is fun. We love the game. It's always going to be a luxury item. It's always going to be a consumer good. But the game is fun, and it got so serious for so long from the brands and the media, not necessarily from the game itself, that was missing. And now you're seeing through branded content, and I'm not just speaking of Callaway, I'm speaking in general, whether that's a media person or Callaway or another company, is they're trying to bring the fun back. And when you do that, people pay attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the focuses that you have to have, is you got to know who your consumer is, and you need to talk to them in a level that they're going to want to appreciate, and you got to give them what they want. And the great thing about branded content is, because you're directly going to the consumer, you know exactly what they want based on the responses that you get to a piece of content. You know, one of the things that's sort of hard sometimes is you could produce an absolutely amazing live sporting event, and if it's a blowout or if it's, you know, up against another piece of competition, like, you know, just think about this. Think about how many channels we have. And when the Super Bowl comes on, it doesn't matter what any of these other channels have. You could have the greatest single live sporting event going on head-to-head with the Super Bowl, and no one's going to know it's there. And someone's going to judge you based on the number of people who watched, and you're not going to get judged favorably. So, you know, that's one of the things I always found kind of ironic is I remember times when we would do baseball games and we would just walk out of there thinking we had a really bad show. And then you get an email from someone in programming, you know, great job. You guys were up 38%. What a show this week. And you're like, did you watch? And we were terrible. But that's sort of one of the great things about branded content is you directly see what the consumer reactions are and what their reactions are and how they react and whether they share, whether they comment, whether they like. Or whether they're feeling negative about something you do, and you can directly, you know, use that feedback to shape what you're doing next.
Now, you mentioned live sports, and it's U.S. Open week. Can you give us some details on what it's like around a major getting a live broadcast ready to air?
Sure. You know, it's one of the great things that Harry's allowed me to do is I get to take a little bit of my vacation time and get to work a few weeks for Fox Sports and their coverage of the U.S. Open. Again, that name, Mark Loomis. You know, there's certain people who you work with kind of throughout the years who when they call you, you say yes. And Mark, for me, is one of those people. Can't, you know, say enough great things about him. You know, it's amazing the ability he has to take a team. No one understands how hard it is to produce golf. I mean, it's the hardest sport to produce. It's not close because, you know, again, it's master the obvious here, but in a football game, basketball game, baseball game, there's one ball. And at the end of the day, if you just show what happens to that one ball, you're probably doing okay. Well, think about how many balls are in the air at one particular moment in golf. Number one, number two, the amount of space where those balls are, you know, it's not like you can see it all from one vantage point. Number three, there's no natural place to take a commercial. Like, you can't just sound the horn and have everyone wait for 2.5 minutes between their shots. So it's super, super challenging. And, you know, NBC and CBS have had the same teams together for years and years, and that's a testament to how great those teams are, and to the, you know, to the Lance Barrows and Tommy Roy and everyone who leads those teams. You know, they create loyalty among their group and consistency. Well, very rare does a new operation start. Well, Mark started a new operation at ESPN in 2010 and put a bunch of us together. I'll never forget it. We were doing that first Open at St. Andrews, the one that Louis won, and we were sitting there and in what's called the ISO Palace, ISO Cabin, which is where I was working. So we basically record all the golf, every shot, and then we determine whether we're going to play it back live, if he can get there live, or on tape. But it's like produced golf. You have multiple cameras doing it. You have a director cutting it, and you have a different ISO producer. Well, there were four of us in that room. It was insane. Four people trying to cut every single golf shot that happened. The next year, I think we had like 12. So that just shows how Mark can recognize issues and, you know, how it's evolving, because, you know, you add hours and hours. So Mark last year asked me to be part of their digital coverage. So I worked with Tim Brando, Mark Brooks, Buddy Marucci, and Natalie Gulbis, and we did digital coverage of the featured groups, and it was awesome. You know, we had, you know, I remember Sunday was just one of those magical days where we made a decision jointly with the broadcasting folks at the USGA to kind of go off the reservation and show Rory. And we started with Rory, and you remember what he did on Sunday there, and we had every single shot. We were on Jason Day's group with Jordan on Friday when he had that vertigo incident. We were on it live. And, you know, kind of had him walking down the hill, because remember, we don't have commercials. So we're walking him down the hill and saw that whole thing. So then this year, Mark has asked me to go back into the sort of cable and network role, and I'm going to be the studio producer for Fox's coverage. So it's kind of fun for me, because I get to work with Holly Saunders again, who I worked with at Golf Channel. We have Gil Hance and Bob Ford, the longtime head pro at Oakmont, going to be part of the team, which is going to be great. And then Mark Brooks and Steve Flesch will be in our studio quite a bit. And the amount of preparation is pretty crazy. You know, outside of the Olympics, you don't see a television compound much bigger than what you have at golf. Just the amount of trucks and people, you know, and all the land that has to be covered. The trucks have already been in Oakmont for over a week and a half at this point, I think. You know, right now it's about what are the stories. You know, once you see, you know, when you know what the pairings are, you're starting to think, okay, what are my stories? What are my storylines? And my job is to kind of work in concert with Mark and help accentuate what we're doing with the coverage without taking away from live golf shots. Because, you know, you're a golf fan. You don't want to go away to the studio for 6 or 7 minutes and miss action. But if we can give you a reason to root for, root against, to learn about a story that's happening, or if we can use the expertise of Gil, you know, a great course architect, and Bob, a longtime head pro there, to enhance your knowledge and appreciation of Oakmont, I think we've done our job. But I think what one of my goals going into this tournament week is sort of bite-sized pieces of content, you know, toss to us and let us do 90 seconds and get it back as players are walking between a green and a tee. We're not going to take it for too long and do things. And honestly, you know, we're on the air for so long, which is great for the viewer, you know, coming on at 10 o'clock in the morning and going off at 8 o'clock at night. You can see a lot of golf, and there's going to be plenty of opportunities to tell stories, and that's kind of what my job is.
Before we continue, I want to remind everybody that they can discuss these topics and all the topics on the THP forum with thousands of golfers every single day. And of course, you can follow, discuss, debate, and interact with Jeff on Twitter, at Jeff Newbarth. He's even got the little blue check mark, so you know it's the real guy. And if you include THP Golf and the hashtag THP Radio, we can include future questions on the show if Jeff agrees to come back. Now, you mentioned working with talent. Recently, the last discussion, you were talking about working with Holly Saunders and some of the other people. I found that last year she was out of her element and, you know, doing the interview with the players, and there were jokes made that there was less about interviews and more about making people awkward. How do you, and I'm not saying this to come down on Holly Saunders, who's a nice person, how do you get the most out of the talent you work with?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things, you know, I'm not going to say, because I wasn't involved in the decision of who was where, but Holly's going to be hosting the studio this year. That's a great fit for her. Mm-hmm. Shane Bacon's going to be doing the interviews this year. That's a great fit for Shane. Do I think Holly can do interviews with players? Absolutely. I've seen her do it many a times. I would say when we had Phil on Morning Drive more than a couple years ago, I guess at this point, Holly led a great segment where she basically got Phil to give him, give her and everybody at home sort of three secrets to short game chips in his flop shot. just off the cuff. That's one of her great abilities, is she has this wonderful, you know, off the cuff personality. You never know what she's going to say, and that's a blessing. You know, in terms of how do you put people in the right roles, that's sort of tough for me to say. But I think that given, you know, the situations that a lot of people don't understand, like I said earlier, how hard golf is to produce. And that was Fox's first attempt at doing the U.S. Open. And if you don't think it's going to be better this year, well, the proof will be, you know, at the end of the week.
And but, I'll say before you go on that overwhelmingly the feedback, other than, you know, some tweaks that needed to happen early on following the ball, sound effects, things like that, overall, the feedback was fantastic. I personally loved the coverage last year. I thought it was different, it was fresh, it was unique, and it's a fun take to bring back the fun in the sport again. And I think I thought the announcers did a great job. I know that there's some polarizing figures there, but they don't take away from the action and make the sport about them like Johnny Miller has in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things you're going to see is the increased use of technology, that what Fox learned from year one to year two is pretty amazing. I've been a part of some of the technology meetings, just learning about what we're going to roll out this week. And it's pretty awesome for the golfer. You know, one of Mark Loomis's first sort of philosophies is, and you got to think about this for a second, is when we televise golf, we televise it backwards from how you play golf. I mean, I don't know about you, but I play from the tee going towards the green. Yet when we do coverage, we do from the green looking back at the tee. Well, one of the goals and one of the things we're constantly looking at how to do is to take you behind the golfer and show you the shot that we have. So we have these tower cams that roll on wheels that can come out behind the golfer in a fairway, show you the exact vantage point that the golfer's seeing, but then using some of our technology, have almost like you're looking through a rangefinder. So you're going to see, what is it to cover a bunker on the left? What is it to carry the front edge of the green? What is it to the back? And if there's a particular hazard in a certain spot, we're going to be able to show you what the number is to that spot. Well, that's how we play. When Velardo's out there waxing you in the granddaddy, he's not sitting there looking from the green to the tee.
I don't recall that at all.
Yeah, it happened. But, you know, that's how we play golf. And I think that's one of the goals. I think one of the other things that's exciting to me is think about the role that Curtis Strange is going to play this week. You know, multiple major winner, multiple Open winner. He's going to be on the golf course analyzing sort of for the first time, you know, as a course walker. Well, to me, that's awesome. You put Curtis Strange down there and his knowledge both of professional golf and U.S. Opens and that competitor right in front of somebody, and he can tell you exactly what he's facing. And Paul Azinger, I mean, what can you say? I mean, he's you know, Mark Loomis worked with Paul Azinger at ABC, and look what that track record was. It was pretty doggone good. I think you're going to see more of the same, and I just love Paul as a teammate, the way that he reaches out to everybody in the broadcast, you know, has conversations with them. You know, Paul's philosophy is when it's on your hole, you're the analyst, and then he gets to come in and take off it. One of my goals for the studio this week is at one point during the week for us to do a segment that's compelling enough that Paul comes off and feels the need to commentate on it and to add to it or even to disagree with it, but at least to notice it and to get there. And I'm sure that moment's going to happen.
Well, it's time for Fire Away. 10 topics. First thing that comes to your mind, nothing to do with golf. Are you ready for this?
I've been studying all night. You know, it's early where I am right now, and I'm preparing for this like I've never prepared for an exam, which honestly isn't saying much, because if you look at my transcript from Syracuse, it was pretty evident.
Well, speaking of Syracuse, we got to kick this off with who's got the better food, Florida, SoCal, or Syracuse?
You know, it's a tough question to answer, because it's not like you're sitting in a location where you can decide which of the three you're going to go to at that moment. I will say this, that my single favorite meal is Stone Crabs at Joe's Stone Crabs down in Miami. So if you're going to ask me overall one meal where I'm going right to the tip of South Beach. I'm going to get Stone Crabs. I'm going to get more Stone Crabs. And then after I'm done with that for dessert, the best key lime pie I've ever had.
The best you've ever had?
Absolutely.
Oh, it's good. Don't get me wrong. Not including Callaway personalities, who is your favorite on-air talent to work with?
Ooh, that's a tough one. That's a great question. You know, it's hard to answer that in the sense of that when you're in the moment with different people, you sort of feel different things, and it's kind of like asking, like, who's your favorite child? You can't answer that.
Oh, I will say it's definitely had a favorite child.
Yeah, mine did too, but that's only because I'm an only. The most satisfying show that I ever had was the Lakers-Celtics 2010, Game 7, we went to the final commercial break, and you have those two iconic franchises basically tied. And we're going to come out in Game 7 in L.A., have 5 minutes to decide who's going to be world champion between the Lakers and the Celtics. And that show was Mike Breen, Mark Jackson, Jeff Van Gundy, and Doris Burke. And some of the best shows I ever had were working with that group. And you certainly cannot find a better foursome of people than that group. So while I'm not going to say they are my favorite, that they brought the best out in the group that I was working with at the time. And a lot of it had to do with the event we were covering because it's such a great event. But, you know, one of the other people who was super influential in teaching me how to produce was Bill McAtee. And, you know, Bill, you know, at the time was USA Network's lead announcer on our tennis coverage and on our golf coverage. And I learned so much from Bill that I still take to this day. You know, certain moments, especially when you're a young producer and you get to these weird situations, whether it's a weather delay in Colorado back at the old International, which happened every day you were there, or, you know, U.S. Open tennis, you know, some craziness is happening at a Todd Martin, Michael Chang match at 1 o'clock in the morning. Bill kept me level and Bill taught me a lot of things. And those are lessons I take to this day. So I owe him a gratitude for helping.
What are acceptable toppings to put on a hot dog?
I'm very traditional with a hot dog. I like mustard, and I'm going to sort of stop at that. I have no issues with a little bit of onions on there. I'm not a sauerkraut person or relish person, but I have no issues with that. What I have an issue with is ketchup on a hot dog. Ketchup does not belong on a hot dog. I'm sorry, it just doesn't.
Hardest adjustment. For those that don't know, Jeff recently moved to the West Coast, and besides his family being back and his children being back in Florida, what's the hardest adjustment moving to the West Coast?
The hardest adjustment is, you know, watching the fact that my Miami Dolphins have ruined my day like before noon on Sundays in the fall. It's unbelievable. Like, at least when you're on the East Coast, you have this pipe dream that it's going to be a good Sunday. And you got till 2:30 until they ruin it. No, you know, I'm in a local watering hole. Having, as Harry and I like to call it, not water, you know, at 9:45 in the morning, and by 11:30, you know, my day's shot. They've ruined it for me. But I do like the new coaching staff, and I love the draft. And as I tell Scott Gorl every time, we're just setting up for when Tom Brady finally retires or is permanently suspended, and when Belichick is permanently suspended for whatever infractions we're going to find that they've done next. And that's what the Dolphins are setting up for. It's all about setting up for the future.
What is the best sandwich and from where?
The best sandwich and from where? My favorite sandwich is right when I moved out of college and I was working at USA. I lived in Hoboken, New Jersey, which for those who don't know is just across the river, you know, just west of Manhattan. You can see the Manhattan skyline. And there's an Italian deli called Vito's. And I would go most weekends and the line would be out the door, sometimes around the corner, and it is a Italian salami, fresh mozzarella. They claim to have the best mozzarella in New Jersey, and I'm not going to argue with them. With, you know, some peppers, some onions, you know, oil, vinegar, salt, pepper. I'm getting really hungry right now thinking of it, and I might have to find a way to get to Jersey at some point to get one of those.
Yeah, you're not getting that in SoCal.
No, but you know what? We don't struggle with food here. We do okay.
Harder to be a fan of. Syracuse or the Miami Dolphins?
Well, I mean, it's the Miami Dolphins. It's not even close, because Syracuse, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, it's amateur athletics. It's not about sports. It's about kids getting an education, right? It's not about who wins or loses.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm sure Donovan was thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Donovan McNabb was one of my lab partners in astronomy. Him and Otis Hill, who played for our Final Four basketball team. But you got to think about it. Syracuse will surprise you, like this past basketball season. That's what's one of the beauties of college basketball. You just got to get hot at the right time. When you have a great coach like Coach Boeheim, you know, you kind of get luck aligning where some Michigan States fall out early, and you have matchups that work in your favor. And that zone, when you have little time to prepare, is tough to deal with. The Dolphins ruin Sundays for me. And, you know, I love Sunday as much as the next person. You know, what's better than going to get a Bloody Mary and having some brunch, you know, sitting here on the West Coast, you know, right near the water. I mean, I lived, you know, probably a hybrid for me from the ocean. They can ruin it for me. But like I told you before, I'm optimistic this year. Coach Gase seems to have something. I was not a Coach Philbin fan. I have not been a fan of some of the decisions the ownership has made in terms of You know, why can't we have a front office aligned with our head coach? Like look at successful franchises, and we don't seem to do that. But you know, I'm hopefully optimistic, and I'm sure I'll be crushed as soon as September rolls around.
Now let's talk burgers. You're going to name a burger called the Emmy, or maybe Emmys, plural. What toppings are on your masterpiece?
Well, it's going to have three patties, right? One for each Emmy. That goes without saying. And the sound you just heard is everybody in my office either groaning, shrugging, or slamming their laptop shut and turning this podcast off. So thanks, guys, for the support. I'm pretty basic with it. But one of my West Coast things is I'm throwing avocado on anything. Anything I can get my hands on that I can put an avocado on, I'm in. So we're going to go three patties. We're going to go avocado. We're going to go some pepper jack cheese. Told you I studied for this. I thought this one was coming. I'm a more of a mustard person. Some type of hot sauce. I don't know what type of hot sauce we're going to go with, but anything will do. Some jalapenos, a little onion, probably grilled. Let's get this thing going.
And there you have it. That's the Emmys with three patties. Now, you're a guy who travels a lot. What do you choose? Back of the plane but on time, or first class but delayed by an hour?
So I've heard, you know, you answer this question, and I thought Jason Finley said it best, which is something I don't say very often, but it depends which way you're going. You know, and it depends what your schedule is when you get there. And also depends on the length of the flight. You know, if you're talking about a hop from, Orlando out to San Diego, and we're only going to be a little bit late, which seems to be the norm these days, I'll probably want to be up front. But, you know, we just took off. We had an unusual one. We did a shoot in Colorado, and I was with Alexis and Sean from my team, and we took off and immediately banked right very, very hard. We were in the back of the bus. And we were on time, but as you can look at Sean Gilroy's Instagram, I think it was his Instagram, we kind of think we went through a funnel cloud when we took off, and it certainly felt like it for the first 20 minutes of the flight. So I'm going to take on time, coming home, as Finley said, because that's just, again, rare to say it, but it's brilliant, and it depends on the length of the flight. So I didn't really answer your question. It depends on the circumstances.
Best, you're a guy who travels a lot again. Best travel city for food outside of your home states. So we'll say no California, no Florida.
I'm going to probably go international for this, and I'm going to go Paris, France. And I don't think I'm going to get too many arguments from people. When we used to do the French Open there, there was just a whole staple of restaurants that we would go to. But, you know, one thing that's interesting, and those who know me well, we'll appreciate this. Food, especially late at night, is not always in the program, not always in the playbook for me. I don't love eating late, especially when you're working kind of crazy. I'll just leave it at that, and everybody in the office, if they're still listening, can laugh at that and get the inside joke there. But I'm not a big late night after working a lot eater. I like to have a good breakfast and kind of go from there. And, there's other things you could do at night.
Now, as a guy in production, you stay up on tech gadgets and things like that. What is the best tech gadget that's come out in the last 5 years?
I'm really, really, really liking two things. The Amazon Alexa, the Echo, love that thing. Tony Riglamuto from my team got one, and I joined him shortly thereafter. The thing is just awesome. Does so many little things. I mean, you could sit there and I don't want to say its name too loud because it'll pipe up and ruin the audio here, but it'll order you an Uber. It'll tell you the weather. It does all my alarms, everything. You're cooking, you ask it how many ounces are in this. It does the conversion for you. You can set like 10 timers at once because I do like to cook and I'm not very good at time. So you have that. And then iPad Pro, the new iPad Pro, I got the 9.7 inch. It's I got the little smart keyboard with it. And, as you state, I travel a lot. And, you know, you pull your laptop out of the plane and you risk being crushed by the person in front of you reclining. This takes that away. I'm really getting to know the keyboard pretty well. Like it, the pencil, stylus, whatever they call it, Apple Pencil's great. And the speed of the device is just fantastic. And, you know, I watch a lot of video and it's a great screen for that. The sound is good and the sizing is just perfect to travel with.
There you have it, gang. We want to thank Jeff for coming on the show and talking about his career, Callaway Golf, and of course the important questions in Fire Away. As you can tell, he studied. You can join us on the THP forum to discuss and debate everything you've heard here. And don't forget to follow along on Twitter, at THP Golf and at Jeff Newbarth with the question, with the check mark. And let us know your thoughts on the episode. Don't forget to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Hacker's Paradise so you never miss a new episode of the Golf Industry Uncut, The Dean Has Spoken, or our new show, On the Tee Box. And please leave a review with your thoughts on what your favorite THP radio show is, and if you agree with Jeff on all his choices and fire away. So for myself, and of course Jeff, we hope you enjoyed this new episode of the Golf Industry Uncut. Bye everybody.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network. Your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.